Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hey, Richard Gunther. Good day.
Hey, good day.
So, no Sarah Lane today. Apologies. She has the day off. But as much as we'll miss her, we'll be fine because Richard's here.
Woohoo! I think that's good.
It is. It's very good. Especially on a day like today, we've got lots of cool stuff to talk about. But you're going to bring us some context, some wider context, so we can get off that hamster wheel of press announcements that everybody tries, you know, with Ignite and Oculus Connect and blah. Not that those aren't going to be covered. Not that they're not interesting.
Nah, that stuff's all interesting. But hey, you had my buddy Mike on yesterday talking about food tech. There's lots of cool stuff going on that in that space too.
Yeah, see, that was fun. So we're going to be talking about high-end custom installation versus or converging with the smart home on today's show.
Exactly.
And when I've always, like, when you say custom or define, is it custom in that these are products that are selectively designed for a particular house? Like, they're not a range of products, but instead, like something like wood paneling or somewhere you would have to cut to fit. These are products in that way or no?
So that's a really good question to ask me when we do this. But I think the short answer is no. It's that they're custom in that they are oftentimes proprietary, but selected specifically for a homeowner based on their needs, and not something that you would find, say, at a Best Buy or at an Amazon. They're things that only dealers have access to and installers need to put in your home.
I think of it as, I go to a person and say, I want to be able to watch big movies in 7.1 surround sound in this room and that room. This is what I want. You go do it. And then that person has the connections to get the equipment and provide it, versus not custom is I go in, like you say, to a Best Buy and I just walk up and I buy the stuff off the shelf and I put it in myself.
Yes, that's a pretty good differentiation. And that's, we'll talk about how that's starting to. Kind of gray, actually.
Yeah, it always was true that, you know, you could do your own custom installation, obviously. It's just, and that's where our discussion begins.
Indeed. So I typically have a soft mute capability that for some reason is not working in your Hangout, and I don't know why that is.
Huh, that's weird.
Because I think you can probably still hear me right now?
Yeah, yes. I can still hear you right
now.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be able to. That's
so
I thought
I was software mute that isn't muting. Huh. I wonder if you select the direct audio in the Hangout settings, it won't respect the software. Whereas if you select default input or something else, maybe it would.
Let me mess with that, and that's a good suggestion. Because
the mistake that Hangout users often make, I've noticed in my years of doing Hangout, is assuming that your system settings are somehow going to have any kind of direct influence on Hangouts. Hangouts on Air never pays attention to system settings. If they do, it's by pure accident. Because people will say, well, I'm in my settings and I have the input. I'm like, but you got to look at Hangout settings. And so knowing that made me think like, I wonder if that could be the issue.
All right, we're going to give this a try. We'll see what happens if I mute.
Oh, yeah. You're muted.
You're muted.
Yeah, went away.
And I was able to safely cough. All right, good.
Ah, good. I'm glad that worked.
Yeah, Hangouts is kind of obnoxious the way it takes over your audio, as is Skype, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, Hangouts on Air in particular acts as if it's not on your computer. Like, once I realized that, it became a lot easier to use because I'm like, it's not going to respect anything. I just have to do it all from scratch within Hangouts. Fine. Got it.
Right.
And there's there's weird stuff like the device driver for the Thunderbolt adapter that I use from Blackmagic doesn't work in Skype, but does work in Hangouts. I have had situations in the past with different versions of both where the opposite was true. So who knows?
Now, you don't need me to record my end, do you?
No, we don't need you to. It's never turned down if you just wanted to, because it's always good to have redundancy. But Roger's recording and I'm recording, yeah. So
we it's should. Not a legal question, is it?
This is a two-party state. Wait.
That I feel that everyone needs to have a recording these days.
I am in a two-party state, mm-hmm. Yes.
So are we, yeah. Well, it's a good thing you knew this was being recorded then.
Since I didn't get adequate warning. Yeah. Well, no, actually, I had to acknowledge the terms for the Hangout on Air. So I hope I'm not blown out, because it looks like Hangouts is also taking over my volume.
You seem fine to me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
You know, I recorded. I'm trying to be careful. Like, am I admitting to a felony here? I've always wondered, let's put it this way. If I recorded a service call to someone, that while I'm on the service call, they said, your call may be recorded for quality assurance. Would that cover my recording too?
Good question.
No, I don't.
Yeah, this is a lawyer question, because it's the kind of thing where it probably depends on how the judge sees it. So you need a lawyer to say, well, most judges would see it like this. Because if they're saying it's being recorded, then both parties are aware it's being recorded. But does it matter who's recording it, even though they said they're recording it? Can I just go ahead and record it too?
What if you also said, I'm recording this call as well?
Yeah, I mean, no, obviously. If you say that, then you're covered. That's the definition of giving the warning. Right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I would assume.
Tell the other person on the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the standard is, if I tell you I'm recording this, then we both know I'm recording it and the recording is legal.
I have actually done the thing where I get on with a live person and I say, oh, and I'm going to be recording this, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
And they suddenly get more helpful.
Well, you know, I usually end up getting a little bit of a defensive stance initially.
Which is funny, because they're being recorded.
Right.
That's interesting. I've thought about this. I definitely have not done. I've thought about getting on and saying, hey, this call may be recorded for quality assurance, right? And they'll be like, yes, that's true. Where and I've stated the thing that's going to happen.
Yep. Just
say it in a playful tone next time,
Richard. I know your manager, and I'm recording you.
Yeah, don't be confrontational. When you're confrontational, generally you cause people to be more likely to be confrontational back to you.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, just for some fun interest. In the discussion area here, mm-hmm. The one thing that I added to the outline that I gave you was just a quick last bullet on trends to watch from the show.
Okay. So when you say you added it, did you add it in the doc?
Sorry, no. And I don't want to be editing your document.
Oh no,
here.
Those are your notes. I just copied and pasted them. So edit away.
Okay. Yeah, no, I sent over.
Yes, I saw what you sent to Amos, and then when I went into the doc, I saw questions, so I thought, oh, he must have already edited it.
Oh, you broke up really bad, Tom.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
I don't know what I can do
did
about
you disappear?
It.
Disappear? Huh? Oh, wait, you just froze on me.
Like, am I back?
Yes.
Okay.
But your video isn't switching to you.
Okay.
It is for me.
Oh, no, now it just did. It's like something
don't
really
panic.
Laggy.
It's probably just a momentary internet hiccup.
It's a matrix.
Don't panic. It's the internet.
Exactly. Here's the thing to remember, Roger. I'm not on fiber anymore, so things may happen.
You know, it's very inexpensive at the supermarket if you just get it with the.
I don't think that kind of fiber has the carrying
capacity.
I got that.
I just got that.
Right. Is it me that's really slow? Like, is my connection all breaking up?
No.
Because Tom froze on me for right now.
Again?
So I can't.
Right now?
Tom is frozen.
No. See, okay.
You are fine.
This is stupid because you're not frozen to me at all.
Not on fiber, not on. Oh, I want Giggle Fiber so bad. It's unfortunately, it's only available in two cities east of LA, east of LA County.
Yeah, AT&T is running fiber in our zip code, but just not near me yet.
So everything you just said before the words AT&T, I did not hear because you were frozen.
Well, I didn't say anything before AT&T. Oh. So there you go.
Okay.
All right, my post show activities just got canceled, so that means I can hang around for the post show discussion.
Oh, good. I'm sorry they got canceled, but I'm glad you'll be hanging around.
I am too, but it's okay. I'll be able to make it up.
I am starting the stream onto YouTube.
Go video. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Hello, day three in the new studio.
Who wouldn't want to eat a sandwich made up of two pancakes and a patty sausage in the middle with eggs and cheese?
Where is that coming from?
Huh.
Oh, I thought you were doing the McDonald's. Da, 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 da.
No, but
I'm loving it.
You didn't listen to any of the words I said after it.
Huh? No, I heard. I just wanted to make, Actually, what I want is a sausage, egg.
You know, McDonald's, okay, so... We eat McDonald's as a desperation move, and Saturday morning after our move, we didn't really have a lot of breakfast options, and the groceries were still at the old place because we had moved faster than we had expected. So I went to Carl's Jr. actually originally. I got there and they're like, breakfast ended 15 minutes ago. I'm like, all right, fine. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go to McDonald's. They have all day breakfast now. So I go to McDonald's, I order a sausage biscuit and a bacon egg McMuffin, and they gave me two sausage.
Aw. You know...
A long story for a small disappointment.
It's weird because I don't like most of McDonald's menu, but there's something about that sausage egg McMuffin.
It's the grease and the salt.
Yeah, it's the fat. Mm-hmm. Oh, delicious. But you know what? I don't like the Big Mac. I just don't like, other than the one, is it the Quarter Pounder where they use non-frozen ground beef or something? The rest of it, just I don't.
Yeah, I don't remember which one that is. Quarter Pounder with cheese, maybe? Is that right? No, I think Quarter Pounder is also frozen meat. But I don't like the Big Mac. I like the Quarter Pounder with cheese. That was always my favorite growing up.
And it's like, why do you have a bun in the middle? Just put a larger
two Albee's patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickled onions on a sesame seed buns.
Buns?
Well, right. See, exactly. That's the problem
there.
Plus, it's just like you're adding to your carbs. And I saw Super Size Me about 10 years ago, and I'm so anti-McDonald's after that. Now, I say that sheepishly admitting that I still go to Burger King. I still go to Wendy's. But for some reason, it really knocked McDonald's out of my head. Huh.
It's just always
the Fixer says the Quarter Pounder is the one with fresh meat. Oh, so there you go.
Yeah, I like those. They're like the only burger I can eat at McDonald's because all of the other ones, like within 10 minutes of eating it, I get like not indigestion, but it's just...
Ennui, regret.
Yeah, like my body literally just tells me you shouldn't have eaten that. Like I suddenly feel like
hate
really
yourself.
Like, I feel very gross.
Self-loathing.
I don't know how to medically describe it. My body just feels, why did you eat that? There's no reason to eat that. You could have had anything else.
Well, because the patties, the super thin burger patties, they're barely even there. Like why bother? I think that's why I always like the Quarter Pounder.
Hey, I have a question for you if I have time for it before we go live.
Sure.
Is there a Twitter handle for the show?
Yes, Daily Tech News. It's the character limit on Twitter when you try to type in Daily Tech News.
I totally understand.
Yeah.
News. Oh, there it is. Hey.
Yeah, it should pop up.
Hey. The awesome. Okay, good.
Daily Tech News. All right, yeah, let's start this show in a minute, shall we?
Yes.
DTNS begins.
It's not like Superman begins. Minutes. Oh, wait, that was Batman Begins.
Yeah, Mary Poppins returns. When do we get Mary Poppins Begins?
I want Mary Poppins story. Went like angry on someone.
Well, she does that. That's
you see the dark side of Mary Poppins, but
she gets quite stern with the children. 30 seconds.
I'm talking all out ruler, like smack.
Mary Poppins as a nun.
Oh, the flying nun Mary Poppins. Crossover.
Oh, crossover. Like Predator versus.
Yeah.
Well, come right, on. She seconds, already played 10 seconds, a nun. 10 seconds. She was Marina.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, September 26, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm the show's producer out on the fringes of LA County, Roger Chang.
Welcome back, Roger Chang. Sadly for us, Sarah Lane has the day off. She'll be back tomorrow. But we are very happy that Richard Gunther, host of Home On and co-host of Entertainment 2.0, is back. How's it going, Richard?
I am doing well. It is going well. And I am here in studio Annapolis, Maryland.
Ooh, Maryland. Represent. We don't get Maryland too often. That's awesome. Yeah, it's been too long since we had you back on. I know Cedia was a couple of weeks ago, but we've had some time to digest the news out of there. And later on, you're going to tell us a little bit about the trends regarding custom installation, convergence of the space, etc.
Absolutely. At the risk of getting typecast as the smart home guy.
Yeah. Eh, it could be worse. Could be like me, the dumb home guy. Yeah. All right, let's start with a few tech things you should know. WhatsApp co-founder Brian Acton told Forbes that Facebook's lawyers argued that exploring monetization for WhatsApp didn't violate an acquisition agreement that said the founders could leave Facebook with all their stock intact if Facebook introduced ads on WhatsApp. So Acton lost out on, I don't know, $850 million or so. Acton says during the conversations he had about it, Mark Zuckerberg said, "This is probably the last time you'll ever talk to me." Acton left Facebook in 2017. The other WhatsApp founder, Jan Koum, left earlier this year. And of course, yesterday, the Instagram co-founders left. So a lot of Sturm und Drang around that going on. Nintendo told IGN that it will not delete your saved games immediately on letting your Switch Online subscription lapse. Thank goodness. Nintendo says if you resubscribe within 6 months, your saves will still be there. You can't access them while you're not subscribed, but they'll come back as soon as you renew. India's Supreme Court ruled 4-1 that the country's Aadhaar database is constitutional and valid. The bench said that the ID program does good things. It empowers marginalized members of society. They did not find that it violated privacy. They found that the defense mechanism against misuse were sufficient. However, the court did limit which entities can require the system to be used. This doesn't mean which entities could use the system, but which entities can say, to use our service, you have to use your Aadhaar ID. And basically, it's just welfare and income tax filing from the government. Anybody else, any private entity, pretty much, according to the court, cannot require you to use Aadhaar, although they could let you if they want to. Let's talk a little bit more about Oculus Connect going on. Facebook announced the Oculus Quest. It's a wireless VR headset shipping this spring for $399. That's the same price as the Oculus Rift, but the Rift tethers you. This one does not. The Quest is the final project of the prototype you probably heard referred to before as Santa Cruz. It has 6 degrees of freedom, hand motion, hand tracking, motion detection. That distinguishes it from the Oculus Go, which only has 3 degrees of freedom. The Oculus Quest has 1600 by 1440 resolution per eye, 1440 resolution per eye, 64 gigabytes of storage, built-in speakers. It's basically an Oculus Go you can stand up and move around with on. It also comes with 2 handheld controllers, very similar to the Rift's touch controllers. Has an RGB sensor that can stream what's happening outside the visor to you. It will not be able to play PC games made for the Rift natively, but Mark Zuckerberg said it should have about 50 titles available at launch, including Robo Recall, The Climb, and Moss. Oculus product manager Sean Liu announced Oculus Go updates to improve the look of the content in the Go for you Go users. Also, the ability to let you cast from your Oculus Go to mobile devices and eventually TVs. And they announced the launch of YouTube VR support, so you can get YouTube on your Oculus Go. Of course, the big announcement here is the Oculus Quest. Richard, how do you feel about this? Untethered is great, right? I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
No, absolutely. This is one of the big hurdles for these types of devices. And I think it's one of the reasons that the lower priced pop your phone in here and play alternatives have done fairly well. If you can get something with the power of Oculus and actually run that in an untethered fashion, I think that's a big thing. And the price point is not so bad either. I've been kind of disinterested in this space largely because I think that we're not quite there yet in terms of the technology and the pricing. And I also have a disadvantage, and I think this is something that you struggle with as well, where I don't actually have good depth perception. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this stuff is really just lost on me, and anything that attempts to simulate a 3D experience just gives me double vision. So that's kind of terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that, it doesn't sound like it's quite that bad for me. I can sense the depth, but it's not as great. And I've got an Oculus Go. It's actually right up there. And I enjoy it when I put it on, but I never feel compelled to go back and put it on. I don't think 6 degrees of freedom would make a difference to me, but if you can afford the extra $200 and you're deciding between the Go and the Quest, I'd absolutely get the Quest just because the ability to stand up and move around is, in my experience from using the Rift and the HTC Vive, a much more immersive experience than just sitting there and being able to turn your head from side to side.
One of the things that I worry about is that we've seen this technology evolve so much and so quickly over the past few years. I still worry about investing now if you're mm-hmm. just getting into this, because yeah. it seems like we're not that far from getting a much more lightweight, ideal, and maybe less isolating experience for people to enjoy.
Yeah. In fact, Facebook had their chief futurist on stage talking about how augmented reality and virtual reality are going to merge. They are going to continue to converge, but that's not going to happen for several years. And so, yeah, if you're an early adopter who likes to play with this stuff, go for it. Obviously, if you want to buy for the long term, you certainly shouldn't have bought the Rift or the Vive because they're tethered, and now they're not. You know, now, and there's an option to convert your Vive, I suppose, but for the Oculus, you're out of luck. For the same amount of money, you can now get wireless, and that wireless is going to get better resolution next, and then it's going to get more of the mixed reality stuff for augmented reality. So I agree with you. I think that's a very good point. Sony says it will allow cross-platform play on Fortnite, something available on most other platforms, Wednesday. Sony Interactive Entertainment President John Codera said the first step will be an open beta beginning today, that's Wednesday, for Fortnite that will allow for cross-platform gameplay progression and commerce across PlayStation 4, Android, iOS, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Microsoft Windows, and the Mac. So I guess we know who has more influence in the world today, Epic Games or Sony, because Sony blinked.
Yeah, and this headline could well have just been Sony finally shamed into making this open for other platforms.
Yeah, I don't disbelieve Sony when they said it was a complex business deal. They didn't quite use those words. They tried to obfuscate it more, but they were basically saying, look, we get to keep all the money when you buy something in the store through PlayStation. So we don't want to lose that if we, you know, let Xbox players come in and play or let you play your Sony account on a Switch. So I don't want to discount the complexity of that, of trying to preserve that revenue line for them. But obviously it was possible. And with enough pressure, they have made it work somehow for them.
Well, it's interesting in that being the top dog, you always tend to be a lot more skittish about anything that could potentially whittle away your revenue streams. Yeah, yeah. And when you're second or third place, you got nothing else to lose. So it's like, you know, full steam ahead. So it's a very interesting case from just a business perspective. You take the whole video game aspect out of it. It's like, you know, when you're top, you it's very much like you want to be the king of the hill and you got to keep trying to knock back everyone else.
And that's the interesting thing here is apparently Sony isn't top dog. Epic is. because Sony did have to adapt something that I don't think they had any intention of adapting. Microsoft will let select testers try keyboard and mouse support for the Xbox One in the coming weeks. Most mouse and keyboards will work, although they have a special partnership with Razer to sell some hardware. Some of it will work with chroma lighting effects, so that's kind of nifty. Developers will have to turn it on per game. This is not something where you can plug in the Microsoft or the keyboard and mouse and just go to town on every game. Some developers may choose not to support keyboard and mouse for various reasons, competitive reasons, possibly just compatibility reasons, whatever. But developers that do want to allow it can now. Microsoft's going to talk more about its partnership with Razer during the Inside Xbox stream on November 10th, if you're interested in that hardware line. But you should be able to plug in pretty much any keyboard and mouse once this rolls out.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see just how well this works with other manufacturers' devices. One of the challenges that Microsoft has with this box is that it doesn't have Bluetooth on board, right? So you actually have to physically connect a keyboard or have a keyboard that uses their wireless technology, and those are few and far between. We have talked about this on Entertainment 2.0 when it was part of the Insider Ring news. And I think this is a great move. I just hope that we get broad device support for it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by broad, you mean beyond just USB, right? Like, because that's what people want. They want wireless.
Yeah. And I don't know how they pull that off yet.
Yeah.
It definitely will make a lot of players happy who complain about playing cross-platform on Xbox with PC gamers who have very expensive high-end gaming mice and keyboards and constantly get their tushies handed back to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And frankly, that's one of their reasons for wanting a wired connection, so that there is zero chance of latency in that connection with your keyboard and your device.
Yeah. Google announced that Chrome 70 will add a switch to its UI. You can do this right now if you know how, but there's going to be a very obvious place in the settings to turn off that feature that automatically logs you into the Chrome browser when you log into Gmail or YouTube or any other Google service. Google, I think, is not getting enough credit by the people who are critical of this, and I'm not saying that they don't have a right to be critical. I think Google wanted to prevent one bad thing and caused another bad thing to happen. The bad thing they were trying to prevent is when you share a device, and I've run into this working on other people's rigs when I'm podcasting, you have to remember to log out of Chrome and Gmail and YouTube, you know. So making it so you log in once, you log out once is very important. However, not making it my choice is always a bad move. Google will also update Chrome Sync to make it clear what data is being synced with your account. And Chrome 70 will also clear cookies on signout, which before some of the Google cookies stuck around after signout, again, to make it easier when you sign back in. But they're going to get rid of that now. They're going to say, forget it. Now, we'll clear them all in the name of privacy.
Yeah, so this is Google, and Google is the king of data, right? So I have a hard time believing they didn't have the telemetry from their users to know how many people are actually using this login to Chrome feature. I didn't even start using it until the kind of mid this year. And once you start using it, it's amazing because you have completely separate environments with different favorites and different cookies and you know, they don't cross at all. It's like you have isolated sandboxes. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful feature when you're trying to manage different things with one browser, even in testing. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think they realize that people don't want to be forced into doing this if they don't have to.
And the downside of this announcement is that Chrome 70 will still have this setting on by default. And again, my guess is the people listening to this show are not the majority. The majority of people don't even know this exists and probably will benefit it because they're not going to do testing. So maybe it should be on by default. I guess I can see an argument for that. I prefer to just force me to make a choice and make an informed choice. And I'm very glad they're giving me the option to turn it off because I'm like you, Richard. I don't want that on. But I do see why they were seeing a benefit for an average user there. Google Maps added collaboration tools now that will let you create a list of places and share with your friends so you can vote on a place to go. So if you're choosing a restaurant, you're choosing a bar, etc., movie theater maybe even. Group members can veto selections and even add their own. So depending on your group of friends, this could be a very useful feature or end up with no decision ever being made. I guess it depends. But this seems to be a very popular feature ad. I've seen a lot of people very excited about this today.
I think this is great. I love things that allow you to collaborate geospatially. That's something that not a lot of platforms have the ability to support. And I remember 10 years ago using Google Maps to plan out events, activities, and places that people could go to for my union, my wedding trip, which was a destination wedding. And even 10 years ago, it was great for that sort of stuff. So the ability to then allow that group to coordinate and collaborate over that information, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Do you remember the Dodgeball service? I think it was even pre-app.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that was what it was premised on, was like, hey, folks, if we all want to meet up at the same place, how do we do that? We've got a web service for you. And of course, those guys went on to found Foursquare and Swarm and all of that. So it has definitely been something people have been wanting to use the internet for a long time. And interesting feature to add to Google Maps. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, don't forget to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. If you recall, a few years ago, we had Richard on and discussed on DTNS how the high-end custom installation smart home and the do-it-yourself smart home were starting to show some overlap. Today, that convergence is more obvious than ever. And I remember on that conversation, Richard, we talked about how in the early days of CNET, I did a series that showed smart homes being installed, and that was the only option. And then when last we talked, it was like, hey, but you can now go and buy these systems. Not all the systems work with each other, but some of them are pretty sophisticated, and even some custom features are starting to show up in these systems. Cedia was a couple of weeks ago, and we got a lot of announcements in this space. What did we find out?
Yeah, so as you indicated, Cedia is really an organization that serves the installer market, serves that custom high-end market. But over the years, we've seen more and more, I guess I would say, infiltration, if you will, of DIY products. And by that, I mean, for example, the Ring Lock or the Nest thermostat or the Amazon Echo that you can just buy at your local store. So part of the reason for that is that those products have an awareness in the public now. And you have this situation, which is kind of unusual, where you had homeowners who were literally spending tens of thousands of dollars for high-end custom systems to be installed in their homes, having envy over their neighbor's $250 Nest thermostat.
Right. Home security systems is one that I recently had to dive back into the market for. And I was shocked. The Simply Safes and the Rings and such. So much cheaper than like an ADT or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a whole bunch of products out there that allow you to do this stuff yourself. And we're starting to see a little bit of like a gray market's the wrong term because that has negative connotations,
yeah, right.
But a middle ground, if you will, where customers who have the ability to see these less expensive products and don't need something that's all custom laid out for them or custom designed for them, realize that they can buy the product, but they don't maybe necessarily want to deal with the wiring, mm-hmm. or they don't know all the different pieces that they're going to need in their home.
That Wi-Fi stuff always confuses me. I just want somebody to do it for me.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, companies, even Amazon has a service like this now, but there are companies that are starting to really specialize for that consumer grade, do it for me, so that you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars, but could instead just spend a little bit of money to get what you want out of this.
Kind of like Geek Squad on steroids, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like that. So, you know, we have that convergence. And then the other thing that we have going on, which I think is really interesting, is this thing where the smaller companies is the wrong word, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you know, we have Apple, we have
Amazon,
we have Google, all in smart home now. But you have these companies that are catering directly to consumers now, really making a push in that larger space. So, you know, you see companies like Google and Logitech and Ring on the show floor. Now, Ring, you know, sure, they're also a big company, right? But they kind of pioneered the smart doorbell in terms of getting that major adoption for it and consumer awareness. So it's interesting to see that sort of integration. We're also seeing companies like Sonos that have historically really just been a consumer product come out with new products, like the new amp they announced a couple of weeks ago, specifically intended to make life easier for integrators. So that's the one side. And then the other side is that these large companies that do this custom install work, like Control4, like Savant, have new capabilities that are intended to support some of these products. I saw an amazing remote control from Savant that actually allows you to control your Apple TV with Siri through their remote.
I just got the tvOS update yesterday, and one of the things it tells you in, like, here's what's new, is we now have support for Siri use on these high-end custom remotes, exactly the kinds you're talking about. In fact, I'm pretty sure Savant was listed as an example.
Yeah, absolutely. They are in that list. So that's a really nice thing to see. We also have companies like Control4 that are just embracing these third-party products. They know their customers want them. And Control4 is going even further by leaving consumers with something of an IFTTT engine. It's not IFTTT, but it's similar to that, where you have the ability to kind of define some workflow so that you don't have to pay for somebody to come out and change when that light bulb comes on. Because you know what? It turns out the lifestyle in your house is a little bit different than it was when they first created your program. So you can go and customize that stuff for yourself without having to spend extra money. That's a great thing. The other day, we just saw an article in CE Pro, which is a magazine that caters to the pro space, with how there's now a driver available by a third party that allows Crestron, another high-end proprietary system, to work with smart things. So this is a trend I think we're going to continue to see. And I think it's very interesting. And I think that it's ultimately going to make many more products available at both ends of the spectrum.
So, we used to think of custom installation meant I've got enough money to pay somebody to come in and rewire my house and make it all work. And DIY was, I'm going to go down to the Best Buy and I'm going to buy some stuff and sit down for the afternoon and figure out how to make it all work. And Richard, I think you've done a great job of explaining how those lines are blurring. Are we still going to see this ecosystem more? This is what I want to finish on is okay, now I've got more options than ever based on my budget. I can find a solution, and some of it can even involve somebody coming to help me install it, and it won't break the bank. But how do I pick what nation I want to live in my smart home? Is it still, once I'm in, I'm going to be stuck there for a while?
Yeah, we still have this problem, I guess I would call it, where big companies are kind of trying to carve out their own space here. And this is true even with Google and Amazon and so on. And so my advice to anybody that wants to get into this is, if you're looking at Best Buy or Amazon or some retailer and you want to buy some products, buy products that say that they work with multiple ecosystems. Ah. If you have iOS devices, make sure it works with HomeKit. If you have Amazon Echoes or Google Home devices, make sure that it works with those as well. And there are many companies that are putting out products specifically to touch all of those major control areas.
Yeah. Sonos is one of them, where they want to they want to work with multiple systems. Roku even recently announced they're adding Google Assistant support, which is an interesting play. And I didn't think of it as an interesting play into the smart home market, but it really is.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. Entertainment's becoming a much bigger part of smart home technology, particularly as you have stuff like a skill that you can use to, say, control your DVR or whatever from your cable service.
Well, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. Keep ideas like this coming. We love these evergreen topics, even if there is not so much evergreen, but just sort of a chance to step back from the day-to-day press release grind and sort of get some perspective on a space like this. Thank you, Richard, for that. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Let's check in with Chris Christensen, who has some news about TripAdvisor.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. There's some big changes going on at TripAdvisor. Full disclosure, I worked there as an employee for a year and a half and as a contractor for another 3 years because they are changing the site to be a social network. Now, they've always had some integrations with Facebook, but the idea is that you can follow people on TripAdvisor. Probably the best description of what they're trying to become is the Facebook for travel, where you come home from a trip and post all your pictures and your reviews and such there and get followed by your friends. I'm not sure that Facebook is not the Facebook for travel, but I'm in the beta program and we'll see how it works out. If anyone can pull that off, it seems like it's probably TripAdvisor, who is the most trafficked travel site in the world. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Yeah, he took the words right out of my mouth. I'm like, isn't Facebook the Facebook for travel? But I do see the allure for them. TripAdvisor is kind of already doing that. A lot of times when I look up things on TripAdvisor, it's just people asking each other questions and talking about their recent trips and whatnot. So maybe it'll just make that smoother.
And it's my go-to if I have any travel questions.
Yeah, as long as they don't make it harder to find the answers, then I'm all for it. All right, let's check in with the mailbag. Rohan from Boston, longtime listener of DTNS, wrote in and said, after listening to show 3372 and the plethora of Amazon Echo announcements, I can think of only one word, IoT. It's actually an acronym, but we're not going to be picky. With this, I think Amazon is able to crack the IoT market, which Google has been unable to do, even though Google started trying it first, Rohan thinks. Moral of the story, companies should not try to get into a market announcing the name of the science field like IoT, ML, AI, or VR. Companies should launch products which use these concepts. These words, IoT, ML, AI, VR, should be used in internal meetings, not in end-user announcements. Amazon's on the right track, and Google needs to learn this from them, says Rohan. What do you think?
Hear, hear. No, I think that's dead on. I think, though, that Rohan may be perhaps conflating the information that we get as tech heads and that we hear in announcements at things like I/O versus what they're actually promoting to consumers. If you buy a Google Home, they're not talking about IoT and ML and AI, but the what you read in the press is. And I think that but the bottom line is, don't use industry jargon when you're talking to consumers. The best way to get consumer adoption is to speak to them in language that they understand.
Yeah. And while we're bringing up the Amazon announcements, I was one of the people who looked at the Amazon Auto and was like, why wouldn't I just do all this stuff with my phone? But you've explained this to me in an email. Explain the appeal of the Amazon Auto, because I think I get it now.
I really think this device is a game changer. They introduced a whole bunch of stuff, but right now, if you want some sort of automation or some sort of assistant in the car, you have to use your phone, as you were talking about. But that isn't always all that convenient. And sometimes you don't have the ability to talk to it automatically without having to press a button or maybe even pick up your phone, and you don't want to do that. So this puts microphones in your vehicle, works the way it would at home, gives you access to thousands and thousands of skills to play games, to get information for navigation, all these things that are harder to just pull up instantaneously on your phone, particularly if you're not looking at it. And then you have that whole home automation tie-in where you can say, I'm home, and open the garage door, or hey, lady, turn off the lights as you're driving away. So I really think this is a Trojan horse and a big win to get for $50 a major piece of technology into a car that would otherwise cost a whole lot more if you were getting something installed.
Yeah. And And I think what I was hung up on is, but I shouldn't need this. And I don't think this is the kind of product that will last forever. It now reminds me of the D-Link Air that I used to use on my Dell Latitude. It's an 802.11b wireless LAN adapter.
I totally have one of those in my closet.
You don't need this product anymore because Wi-Fi is built in. And Amazon Auto is the same thing. Eventually, this won't be a device you'll need to bridge the gap, one hopes. But you have explained why it's very helpful right now. So thank you for that.
What do you have more of? Old cars or new cars on the road right now?
Yeah. No,
old cars.
Exactly. Specifically my 2002 Prius. hey, thank you, Richard, for joining us. Really love getting your insight. Let's not make it so long until next time.
All right. That sounds like a good idea.
If people want to find more about what you got going on, where should they go?
So I write and podcast at the Digital Media Zone. It's thedigitalmediazone.com. And the main show that I typically promote is Home On. That's my DIY smart home show. And I am also going to be at the Smart Kitchen Summit next week. So I'm going to put in a plug for Mike's Kitchen Tech show because that is a lot of fun. And I am going to be one of the discussion moderators there again this year.
Don't forget, folks, if you use code DTNS, you get a discount if you want to attend. That's October 8th and 9th in Seattle, the Smart Kitchen Summit, smartkitchensummit.com. Thanks to everybody who supports us on Patreon. It's so much better to support us directly. And we are up over last month right now, but we want to see how far up we can get. So keep the backing coming at patreon.com/DTNS. And don't forget, I'll be at a conference this weekend in Los Angeles, September 30th on Sunday at 1 p.m. I'll be doing a workshop on preparing content for your podcast at Outlier CS. That's OutlierCS.com. Our email address is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at DailyTechNewsShow.com/live. Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Simon Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
See if I can fit this back in its
slot.
I don't know what slot that is.
I have a bunch of express cards that I can't use anymore because the laptop I bought it for no longer runs.
I have one that was actually an IR controller to be able to use your laptop to control your home entertainment system. How stupid is that?
You know, I remember when Gateway was selling just a PC that sat next to this like 38-inch CRT, like this monstrous CRT. It would take at least two guys, if not three, to like put it and install it in your home. And I used to think that thing would be awesome. Can you imagine playing video games on 34 inches?
Imagine the detail. The pixels, the polygons.
Let's see.
All right, what should we call this show, Roger?
We have the Epic Play on Sony.
The Epic Quest Play on Sony, yeah. No, that works. That scans. I like
cool.
it.
Mm-hmm. There's also Ocular Spectacular.
That's pretty good.
Oculus
too.
Is within 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Do we have any on on the main topic?
Let's see.
Those are both good.
Don't DIY dime DIM me. E. Do it for me.
Or DIY. DIFM.
DI. So it's don't DIY DIM E. Do it for me.
What?
Dime D it for me?
Hmm. It's all the way at the bottom.
What does DIME stand for?
DI me. Do it for me. DI me. Don't DIY. DI me.
Oh. Yeah. There actually is an industry initialism for this DIFM.
Yeah. Somebody used that. DIFM is greater than DIY.
Yeah, that was good. Do it for me. Just build it into the house that I buy.
Well, and that's a big thing that is going to happen. So today, obviously, I don't know if you, well, yeah, I think in fact you post, did you post on Twitter about this, Tom? The Amazon is getting into houses, into.
No, it wasn't me. Like,
Amazon is investing in a builder. And so, you know, I mean, you just know that those homes are going to come with Ring doorbells and any, you know, cameras that are part of the Amazon ecosystem.
The Ring alarm system. The
Echoes, all over. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I just want it so when they build these homes, it's easy to replace those devices, right? In the same way you can replace a wall switch. Like,
yeah. I have to say, I'm having just moved, I am pleased with how easy it is to, I pulled the Nest out of my old house and it was super simple. And I put, they had a like really simple Honeywell that had been in there when I moved in. I put that back on the wall and it was a lot easier than you would think to do that. On the other hand, the Nest cameras that I have, the HomeAway Assist isn't working. It keeps turning itself back on while I'm still home. And I think there's some kind of GPS location information that's stuck in a cache where it's saying, well, your phone is definitely not at home because you don't live there anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I haven't tracked down exactly how to clear that. So
that's interesting. Have you changed? And I know this is really giving Google a lot of credit for integration. I don't know if they've gone this far yet, but have you changed your home location for Google yet?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a good question, though.
I just want new homes with conduit so I can run Cat 5, Cat 6, whatever.
Here. Yeah. So what are we calling this, by the way?
Oh, I like the Epic Plan Sony or the do it for me DIFM is greater than DIY.
Yeah, let's do the Epic Play because DIFM greater than DIY kind of counts against my whole show. So let's not go there.
That's a good point. As clever as it may be. You're like, no, don't do that. We could put a question mark at the end with the implication that the answer is no. No, I've taken good advantage of DIY solutions for smart home stuff during this move. And man, so much stuff is so much easier to set up to, you know, tear down and reset back up than it used to be.
Oh, it was a huge hassle initially when this stuff came out. And I think that's one of the things that companies have learned, even companies with products already on the market, that now when you try and set devices like those up, they've tried to streamline that, what would I call that? A handshake process or provisioning process, because they know that that's so hard for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for tech heads, it's like, oh, yeah, so what? I have to get this number. I have to type it in. I have to put my Wi-Fi. It's like, no, you know, and really, you know, this is something that Apple got right from the beginning with HomeKit. And whether HomeKit is successful or not yet, it's put pressure on a lot of the other manufacturers. And I think that's good.
You know, I have a Honeywell that was in this new house when we moved in that is Wi-Fi capable. I haven't hooked it up though, because I want to pull it out and put my Nest on. But part of me is like, well, maybe I should try it. But it's so old, which is funny to think. Like, something that's Wi-Fi connected is old. But you know, I looked up the features for it, and the features are you can set the temperature from an app. Like, okay,
wow. Right. I mean, maybe you can set your program on it.
Yeah, but you can do the schedule. It's not going to be automatic. It won't learn from you like the Nest or the Echo Bee or any of those other cool ones.
The question becomes, is that app stale now? Are they still maintaining it? Uh-huh. Is this something that's going to work
with other devices?
Security
was my big
hang
up. I was like, well, hold on a minute. Like, who's updating this and how secure? I don't want somebody coming in hacking my thermostat.
Yeah, exactly.
I should have got a Nest. I just got a cheapo Honeywell.
I actually got the Ecobee.
Oh, hey, Amos.
Hey.
When did you pop in?
Right after the show ended, as promised.
Hey, this is awesome. I get to see you even though we're not recording tonight like we should be.
So you guys, tell the folks how you guys know each other.
We actually met up at Buzz Out Loud meetup in South by Southwest. There to meet you, Tom.
That's
about 8 years ago.
That's insane. Right?
9 years ago now, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it was 09, 10, whatever. Yeah. And we stayed in touch on Twitter for years after that. Then when I moved to Texas, I was like, he chastised me for being so close to South by and not going. And the next year I was like, you know what? I got to go just to shut him up. And then I've been every year since then. We always hang out when I'm down there.
That's awesome. And you guys are doing a show together.
And yeah, we do a show together.
Let's Talk About Thrones, a show where we recap pairs of episodes of Game of Thrones. And Richard's never seen it before, so we get his rough takes on what's going on. And me and Jenny Josephson, previous producer of this very podcast, we've seen it and read most of it, and we kind of have the inside line on it. And we try to keep Richard up to speed on the things that he missed, and he gives us new perspective on things we didn't really consider. And
yeah, that's great. Really, I love fun. That.
He's being really polite about that. It's more like they're trying to be nice about how little I'm actually catching as I'm watching the show.
Now, Amos, yeah, I know Jenny's read the books. Have you?
I'm on the fourth book. So okay. I've read up to the first couple chapters of the fourth book.
Gotcha.
Which means we're now passing my book knowledge in the show, because we recorded through the middle of the fourth season. Mm-hmm. And we have the first about three seasons released. In fact, I was working on that before I took a break to watch the show, releasing the next episode.
That's cool. So cool.
And Roger, I thought I was completely stupid, because I was looking on the internet on how to replace my POTS cables with Cat5 when I moved in the house, only to find a video by friend of the show, Ayaz Akhtar, who said, look at the cables and at the main base and see if they're already Cat5. I look in there and they're already Cat5. So I've switched over my entire house from POTS to Cat5.
Nice. Yeah, so oftentimes
it was pre-wired.
Sorry. Oh, no, I was just saying, I looked under my house and the house was built in 1936. So and no Cat5. There's actually one Cat5 and it's telegraph running along wire. The dirt and it snakes around the plumbing and it goes from one end of the house to another end of the house that I don't use for the show. So it's kind of like, man, what I need is a long extension pole so I can, because this guy who ever lived here before drilled little access holes in the floorboards. I just need something so I can dip the line in and then reach across, like, you know, 500 feet and grab it and then pull it underneath.
Yeah.
I the basement in this house was finished by the previous owner, who was a subcontractor himself, and there was no cable down here, and there's one cable in the room I'm in now, so I had to get a cable Ethernet adapter. I can't remember what those
are called. Oh, a Balin?
Go from the garage where everything's centralized down to here through the cable. So all my Ethernet down here is through that cable line, because we don't have cable, we're cord cutters. And then I had to drill into the wall to run an Ethernet back to the switch, that's the four port switch that's behind the TV in the living room down here, for the Xbox, the Apple TV, and the PlayStation, because I try to keep everything as wired as possible, even though I'm on a Netgear Orbi system, so I've got pretty good Wi-Fi everywhere.
They just need to run like 2 or 3 inch diameter, like just conduit through the house when it's brand new. So some new technology that you need to get wired, you can just, you know, tie it to like the old one and run it through instead of trying to snake it, drill holes.
Mm-hmm. I'm dealing with that right now because I'm installing security cameras through the exterior of the house. We've got Nest cameras inside. I'm putting a Samsung system outside, but I want to have the DVR inside, and there's no ports for me to go through for the VNC cables. So I'm having to drill holes through the exterior walls to get those. And
That's why wireless is so popular.
Yeah,
like, oh, I don't have to drill.
It's true.
But hey, you got to route power to it. So
I want to give eBarch we have the smartest audience in the world award for the moment. He just saved me some research that I've been intending to do, and found this in the Nest documentation. The Nest app will automatically set your home's location when you first create an account. Sometimes it can be off by a bit and affect HomeAway Assist accuracy and timing. To fix this issue, you can manually set your home's location in the Nest app. So that's what I just did. I just went in and changed the location. We'll see if that works. Thank you, Ebarch.
All right. That's great.
Yeah, no, I know. This is awesome. Ebarch just saved me a ton of time by finding that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I love when the audience can answer your questions.
Yes.
Like practically live even.
And hopefully maybe somebody else out there was having the same issue or something similar.
We had a non-programmable thermostat in the garage for the garage heater because I'm in Alaska, so you got to keep the garage warm.
I can send you my garage. It's really warm.
the thermostat that was in the house was programmable. It was a Honeywell old school programmable one. The one in the garage was like one of those little rheostat, like, you know, just kind of turn and hope you're getting somewhere.
Oh yeah, wow.
Where you want it. So when I installed the Ecobee, I took the Honeywell and put that one in the garage. So now I can actually dial in exactly, you know, where it needs to be, and the Ecobee with the little sensors throughout the house keeps everything else nice and toasty. So, and we don't have air conditioning up here, so, you know, just open a window. But
that's the one thing.
Ebarch is like, I hope that helps. He's like, I'm still having issues on my end, even with the correct address. Hey, man, it at least narrows it down. It gets me, you know, I would have spent time finding that and trying that. So now I'm already ahead. I appreciate it.
I am kind of disappointed that the Nest address for home and the Google knowledge of where your home is aren't the same. I do hope at some point that they pull those together.
Yeah, of course. Then it gets into privacy issues, right? Where they're like, these days, I think people are really cautious about integrating that because they're like, oh, but what if people get mad that we did that? We have to make sure we do it with permission and all of that. Especially because Nest was its own Alphabet company previously, and it's only recently in the past year or so folded
part of Google again.
Yeah.
Right. And that's probably true. I bet a lot of consumers who own Nest don't necessarily think of it as a part of Google.
Necessarily.
Well, if you want to hear more puns, stay tuned on the live audio stream.
That's right, folks. We're wrapping up the video for now, but stick around if you're on Discord or listening to Good Day Internet. There's more to come on all of these locally owned, independently owned DTNS stations.
One of the things that got me is when we went to Disney, I fired up the Nest Aware, you know, all the Nest stuff for the camera so we could look at the last 30 days and stuff like that. Because typically just having the live view serves our purpose. There's no point in paying, you know, $40 a month or whatever it would cost for the cameras. Went to fire that up and it never charged my card. It never activated it. But when I go into the system, it still says pending activation.
Mm-hmm.
Know when it's going to go just randomly charge me $40 and I'm going to be able to look at
when you cancel and it won't be $40.
So and I've emailed them and I've hit the little support thing and it just still says pending activation, like there's another step someone's got to take that just didn't happen, but it hasn't charged me, so I'm good so far. But it wasn't useful during the Disney trip because we had every time the sun would come through and shine a certain, you know, a certain way, or the clouds would go over, it'd show that we had activity in the house and the house was all locked up. So it's kind of nerve wracking, but whatever.
Yeah, we used to get it. I'll be curious if there's any quirks like that at the new place. But we used to get cars driving by if their headlights hit the front door just right, because it was a glass front door at the old place. Mm-hmm. It would set off the motion detector.
So I learned something at Cedia for why that happens.
Mm.
That these cameras are actually just looking for changes in pixels.
Oh yeah.
And identifying that as motion.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you have a higher end camera that actually has a passive infrared sensor mm-hmm. on it, then it's looking for actual motion and right. those are less oh. likely to get set off by something.
That's
like that.
Interesting because the nice. Security system we have has an actual infrared motion detector, but also has a camera. And I wondered why the actual motion detector is wired into the alert system, but the camera just alerts you. And that's why. That totally explains it. Because the camera is just not good enough to rely on.
Right. Right.
Hmm.
the camera is there to record anything if the other sensors notice trouble, basically.
In the exactly.
System. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's so, just a it's a production assistant to the full producers of the rest of the system.
Well, and it can also augment it, right? Because you, like, for example, with the higher end Ring products, you can say that, okay, I want to define this zone in my picture. And if anything in this zone changes, then that is going to trigger an alarm situation as well, regardless of whether it's actual motion or not. I want to, you know, what changes happened there. And so that's kind of interesting too, because that gives you very specific use cases, particularly in security systems.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the most aggravating part of this security camera install that I'm going through right now is when it's in the box.
DNC cables?
Yeah, well, no, actually, it's slightly worse than that, actually. when they're in the box and you pick up the camera, and you can swivel, you know, all the different directions, you can twist it and everything else, and then you use the little Allen key to tighten it up. Oh, that looks great. And then when you're at the top of a 20-foot ladder, with your hands over your head, trying to do that from behind the camera because you can't get your face to see the point, and you're trying to get it to swivel. Then you get climbed down from the camera and you go and check, and you're like 30 degrees off of where you thought you were. That's the most irritating part.
Take your phone with you.
Oh, no, because I don't need to be doing anything else on that damn camera on that ladder, because I'm already scared crapless. I'm going to fall and die.
Fair point.
Do it during the winter when it's all snowy.
Yeah, no. There'll be fewer spiders trying to attack me. I got bit times. That was
good news, Ebarch. My camera turned itself off.
Hey.
Which may not sound like a good thing, but it means it noticed that my phone was at home and decided, oh, well, I don't need to be on anymore.
That is good.
Yes, yeah, so that, well, you know, fingers crossed, but that seems to have fixed it for the moment. Which means I can go and start plugging in the other. I hadn't plugged in the other cameras. So I was like, I'm not going to do this till I figure this all out.
The first data point is positive. Got
it. Yeah. That's good.
Cool. So, Tom, I know it's early, but do you guys know if you're going to be covering CES again?
Yeah. The intention is to do it. We still have to get a few pieces in place to do so, but I think we'd all like to.
Cool. They contacted me about using the recording space this year,
mm-hmm.
which I'm really excited about, because that is going to be so much better than trying to do it at a hotel room or find a quiet corner somewhere, which doesn't exist.
I'll be honest. I've done the hotel room and the show floor, and they both have their advantages and disadvantages. You know, the hotel room obviously has problems with access, you know, getting everybody there. It's kind of weird, and lighting can be an issue sometimes too, but, mm-hmm. But there's some advantages to it, cause you don't have to traipse your way all the way into the show floor, and bring your guests through the badge access and all of that. So,
yeah, that's true.
Or, that's true. Have, unexplained power outages.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that could happen at a hotel, but, that certainly happened to us last year.
That was crazy.
Tom, if you're doing it in the hotel, how are you going to get that ambiance of people, random people walking behind you the entire
time? I know.
Well, that's how you know. You just do it from the street. Like on the strip, just have people walk behind you.
Yeah.
No, you don't want that.
You definitely don't want that. No.
No, not in Vegas.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here, folks. Thanks again, Richard, for joining us, man.
Absolutely love joining, and happy to do this anytime. And, you know, like I said, I can pretty much hold my own to discuss most of these tech topics. Picking up with everything. So, and I work from home. So if you're stuck for a guest ever, don't hesitate to reach out.
We will not hesitate. I mean, Amos, good to see you jump back in too, man. That was cool.
I'm just happy to be here and say hi to Richard.
Yeah. Sarah will be back tomorrow. Until then, have a good day.
Have a good day.
Good day, internet.